Fall is here, but there is still plenty of work to be done outside. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron is here, along with DNR forester Mark Vitosh. Today, fall garden chores. We'll talk about planting bulbs, trees, and shrubs, how to get your perennials ready for winter. We'll talk about fall lawn treatments, how to harvest and store squash and other late-season produce, and we'll talk about whatever you want to talk about. Call us with your questions, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. It's Horticulture Day. Join us after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It is Horticulture Day today, and with me are Iowa State University, I should be able to say that better by now, Extension horticulturist Richard Giron, Department of Natural Resources forester Mark Vitosh, and today we're talking about fall garden chores. Hello, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you both for being here today. And Mark, before we start with the garden chores, I know you want to give us a fall color update.
The fall colors are changing. Actually, the weather's been perfect for, you know, a couple weeks ago we were on, we talked about different things, and actually the kind of nice sunny days and these cool nights should help, and I've noticed a lot of communities, the maples and stuff, anything with kind of a purplish red is really starting to show. So the next couple weeks, you know, depending on weather, things are really starting to change out there. And one addition, I got a hard time last time. Another great place to go to look at fall color is at the many county conservation board parks throughout the state. I have a few friends that work for counties that called me that Friday and said I was just advertising state parks and not county parks. So there's many places people can enjoy. The thing I would tell folks is call ahead just to see what's happening in their area.
The counties up north, are they starting to peak at this point?
They're not peaking, but the maples are really starting to come, and the oaks are actually starting to change a little bit. We gave the fall color line last time for the DNR out, and I called that this morning to see what Monday's update was, and it said the maples are really starting to show, and the oaks are actually starting to change. So they were thinking within this next week to 2 weeks, should start seeing a lot of color, again, depending on what happens with the weather.
And if I remember correctly, a couple of weeks ago, Richard, you were a doubter. You said that it was going to not be a particularly spectacular fall.
Well, I'm still not convinced.
Well, and I didn't say it was going to be spectacular. I just said things are starting to change. And I would agree with Richard, because in some parts of the state, it's just blah.
Right.
Things are just not coming. And in other places, it's spotty. So that's why calling ahead, if you're going to go somewhere and really plan, just to really see what's happening in the area that you might be traveling.
Just for example, sometimes the cottonwoods have a nice yellow color.
Mm-hmm.
This year, they're just not doing much.
Blah, as I said
very
before.
Very blah, kind of a brownish yellow. And the same with the honey locust. Sometimes a really nice yellow. This year, not much.
Same thing, to add with that is the ash. It's the same thing. Sometimes a very vibrant yellow. This year, there's a little bit of yellow with a lot of brown.
But those are only a few species. So maybe the oaks and the maples might do very nicely later on. So some are doing not so great. Others still could do very nice.
And these clear days are going to save us.
They're nice. Yes.
The weather's been good for, if there is going to be some color, the weather's been good for it.
And this weather is perfect for getting out and doing those late summer, early fall garden chores as well. And that's what we're going to talk about today. Of course, we'll also take your calls at 866-780-9100. So I want to talk about planting first, Richard, because I know that there are a few things we should be thinking about planting right now. And of course, one of those is bulbs.
Right. The spring flowering bulbs, your tulips, your daffodils, your hyacinths. You want to plant those in the fall. October is ideal. You want to plant them and give them a chance to develop a good root system before winter. So October is great. You can plant them as late as November, weather permitting. But in Iowa, when you get into November, things get very, who knows. So try to get them in the ground in October. And as far as tulips and daffodils, plant those about 6 to 8 inches deep. Plant them in clusters, basically where you have maybe 15, 20, 25 in a group. Make sure it's a sunny site. The site should receive at least 6 hours of sun. It should be a well-drained soil. With your things like crocuses, they're smaller. Plant those 3 to 4 inches deep, but again in clusters so they're effective in the landscape. And if you do that in October, they should be just fine next spring.
When you talk about planting in clusters, I've seen people do so many different things with daffodils. And do you have a favorite kind of arrangement that you like to see? Because I have seen people who have done clusters at regular spaces across their lawn. That's not my favorite way to see daffodils. But do you have a tip for making them the most appealing, Richard?
Well, there's different ways of doing it, and no one way is absolutely correct. It depends upon your personal preference, but I don't like seeing them in a straight line, like little soldiers marching down to whatever. So I prefer clusters where you just put a cluster here, put a cluster there, and all of the same variety. So if it's a tulip, it's all that red tulip. Or if it's a daffodil, the same variety. I think they have, or when you do that, that creates a bigger impact when you see those. So that's what I prefer.
Is it a little bit easier to control spacing with tulips than it is with daffodils?
With the tulips, the key point there is that they tend to be short-lived. The modern tulip is great. It's very attractive. It has those big, huge flowers. But the actual plant oftentimes only blooms for maybe 3, 4, or 5 years, and then it kind of declines and dies out. So when you plant those, you have to replant those periodically. With the daffodils, they're much more vigorous, and they'll come back and they'll bloom for maybe 15, 20 years, and the actual clump gets bigger each year. So you get more and more bulbs, you get more and more flowers. So the daffodils, they can be there for a long time. Tulips typically maybe 3, 4, 5 years.
Are there other things we should be thinking about planting right now in the garden? I'm thinking maybe of garlic. Is it still a possibility to plant garlic, or are we too late?
You could still plant garlic. We'd like to get that in the fall and then cover it up later on with some pine needles or maybe some straw so it has some winter protection. So you could do that this month. I think Mark might talk about planting trees and shrubs. We can still do that. As far as planting, let's say, grass seed, getting a little bit late for that. Actually, late summer is best for grass, and that's usually sometime basically from late August till about mid-September.
And when I had Kathleen Dellett on the show to talk about organic gardening, she was talking a lot about ground cover for your garden. There is still a little bit of time to get a ground cover in if you need to do that, isn't there?
If you want to put a cover crop in there, you can if you choose certain varieties or certain types. For example, annual rye is something that germinates typically within 4 or 5 days if it has moisture, but that's the key. It needs some moisture. But if it has the moisture, it germinates very rapidly, grows quite quickly in the fall, and gives you some cover.
All right. So if we get some of our more traditional fall rains, that would work. But you might actually have to water it if
you might have to initially. Right.
It's certainly been dry recently. So Mark, let's talk about planting trees and shrubs. What do we need to be thinking about?
Well, the real important thing is myself, I love the spring because spring, you stick it in the ground, you have all season to go. But actually, fall gives an opportunity to plant some things, especially with the deciduous trees. I'm not a big fan of a lot of the pine and spruce this time of year because you tend to get some root growth. You want to have pretty good soil temperatures, and those with the cool nights, the soil temperatures are starting to drop. But with deciduous trees like oaks, maple, stuff like that, you still might get a little root growth. So if you plant in the fall, there may be some advantage. And sometimes there's just trees available this time of year. So it is,
there are a lot of sales.
Time. Yeah. So it is still an okay time. I'm kind of with Richard, though, too. If you're going to do it, I like October. If you start getting into early November where it really starts to get cold and stuff, you're really not gaining that much, and you're probably not going to get much root initiation by planting at that time. So right now, and with the temperatures that we're having, I think there's a great chance to take advantage of that. The real important thing, just like anything else when you're planting trees, is do not say, I want to plant this kind of tree. Look at your site and see what's available as far as space, soil drainage, available light. Do you have utilities? What restrictions do you have? And then find a plant that fits that space. And you'll tend to limit a lot of the problems. The other thing is, if you're planting trees or shrubs, and even bulbs for maybe the first time and stuff, there is a law in Iowa that says you have to call Iowa One Call 48 hours before you dig. So if you're digging in areas that you've never dug before and stuff, you are actually required to call ahead 48 hours, two working days, to get your utilities located, because you don't want to be cutting the cable line, the phone line, or a gas line. So it's really important, and they've made it really easy. You just dial 811, and they'll link you up to Iowa One Call, and then they'll come out and they'll put little flags and tell you where your utilities are so you don't blow up the neighborhood.
Right.
And that's okay. Always good.
Yeah, and that's real important. It, this time of year, even in the spring, if you're going to dig, you are required to call that number and get those located.
Richard, how about getting our perennials and other plants ready for the winter?
Well, as far as perennials, at some point we typically cut those back. But as long as they're still green and healthy, we like to leave those because they're still functioning, they're still manufacturing food, and some of that food is then sent down and stored in the roots and crown. And the more food that they store, the better the plant next year as far as bloom, vigor, size. So as long as the plant is typically still green, we leave it. Now, eventually, in a few weeks, we're going to have a hard freeze, and that's going to destroy that vegetation. At that point, we can go out there and cut it back, and we can cut it back to the ground. Now, if we don't get to it, we can also do that early next spring. But you typically wait until that growth has been destroyed by a hard freeze.
You mentioned overwintering geraniums. What do we need to know about that?
Well, there's different ways of doing that. You typically want to go out, obviously, before a frost or freeze. And one way is to simply to dig them up, put them in a large pot, bring them inside, and treat them as a house plant. Put them in a sunny window. They will bloom a little bit indoors. They will get tall and lanky eventually. So around March, take a pruning shears and cut them back quite severely. Cut them back by maybe 50%, 60%. And that will force them to kind of grow again from the base. And by May, you should have a nice plant. Another good way to do that is to take cuttings, where you go out and take 3 to 5 inch cuttings. You pinch off the lower leaves. You dip the cut in a rooting hormone, and then root those in perlite or peat.
Okay. We're going to talk more about fall garden chores in a moment, and we'll also be taking your calls at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. It's Horticulture Day. My guests today are Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron and Mark Vitosh, forester with the Department of Natural Resources. That number again is 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and with me are Mark Vitosh, a forester with the Department of Natural Resources, and Richard Giron with Iowa State University Extension. We've been talking about fall chores, and before I leave the topic, we have a lot of calls on the line, so we can do this briefly. But, Richard, what do we need to be thinking about as far as our lawns go this time of year if we're concerned about weeds?
Well, if you have broadleaf weeds, October is the ideal time to apply a broadleaf herbicide. In the fall of the year, the perennial broadleaf weeds are kind of preparing themselves for winter. So they're manufacturing food and then sending that down into the root system for storage. And if you apply a broadleaf herbicide in the fall, like in October, the actual foliage will absorb that and then send that down along with the stored food. So you have that downward trend in the plant. So the herbicide moves very nicely into the root, and then it destroys the plant. So if you put on something in the fall of the year, you get very good weed control.
All right. We got an email from Margaret in Nevada, and since we were talking about planting things, she's curious about blueberry bushes. She's interested in planting some blueberry bushes in the Ames area, and she wants to know what species is recommended and when is the best time to plant.
Well, we can grow blueberries, but we do have to amend the soil. We don't have exactly what they want. They basically require two things. They require a well-drained soil. They also require an acid soil. Our soil pHs are much too high for them. So when we plant those, what we have to do is to amend the soil. And the best way to do that is when you plant, when you dig the hole, take half of the soil from the hole and mix that with Canadian sphagnum peat, or sphagnum peat, it goes by various names, but it's very, very acidic. So when you mix that half and half, you very effectively lower the pH. As far as varieties, we have a number of varieties like Blue Crop, Blu-ray, Patriot, Elliott that should do well in most of Iowa. You do want to plant two or three different varieties for cross-pollination and maximum fruit production.
When you amend the soil, how long does that effect last?
Well, when you hopefully for quite some time. When you do that, you want to dig a fairly shallow hole, but a wide hole. The blueberries have a fairly fibrous root system, quite shallow, so you don't really need to dig a big hole. And then later on, as you grow the plants, you may want to go out there maybe every year in the spring and maybe fertilize with something like ammonium nitrate, which does give you, or ammonium sulfate, excuse me, which does fertilize the plant and also tends to keep the soil pH fairly low. So you can do that. But blueberries do require some maintenance if you want to grow those.
All right. Well, good luck with that, Margaret. Next up, we've got Nora on the line from Mason City. Hello, Nora.
Hi.
Hi. What's your question?
I was wondering about trimming maple trees. I have several maple trees, and they are... When they're okay in the winter, but in the spring when they get leaves, they brush against the house. And I just wondered if it's a good time to trim them after the leaves fall, or is there a better time? And also, I'm considering planting spirea, and I was wondering when that might work the best.
Well, I'll talk about the pruning, and I'll let Richard talk about the spirea. You said it, Nora, that actually the best time probably here is in a couple more weeks once all the leaves fall off and the trees actually go dormant. There are two times, and there are some exceptions, but there are two times on most species that I like to avoid pruning, and that's in the spring when they're going under or getting new foliage and putting out flowers, and in the fall when they're going under a leaf color change. And those are such short period of times, I tend to avoid those times of year. Because of the changes in the plant. So in the next couple weeks, once we get a couple really good frosts, and you're further north there, so probably won't be too much longer. Once those leaves fall off, that's a great time to start doing some pruning.
Okay.
The spireas are tough, adaptable shrubs. They're not hard to plant at all. You could plant them this October, no problem. If you do so, just water them periodically this fall into November. Okay. You can also plant them in the spring. They're very adaptable. They'll grow in sandy soils, clay soils, alkaline soils, acidic soils. But the only thing they really don't like is wet, poorly drained sites. But beyond that, they're very tolerant.
Okay. All right. Cool.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Nora.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. Marty's on the line next from Mitchellville. Hello, Marty.
Good morning.
What's your question?
We live in the country, and we've lived there for several years, and we have a large fruit cellar that's right next to our house. And the rest of our lawn is pretty nicely landscaped, and we have just always let this old cave or fruit cellar just go. It just has long grass and kind of weeds on it. And the reason we don't get rid of it is because it is the buffer between an old well and our basement. And in all these years, we've never had a drop of water in our basement, but the fruit cellar gets full of water. So we feel like we can't get rid of it, but we've decided it's time to do something to landscape it. And I'd like some advice on what you would suggest as a ground cover or something that would spread, that would be relatively low maintenance. I think we'll probably have to terrace it somewhat so that when we take the weeds and the grass out, that the dirt doesn't all wash off of it. But what would you suggest to put on something like that?
Is it in sun or shade? I'm assuming sun.
It's on the east side of the house, so it's mostly sun until afternoon.
Okay.
I should say mostly until afternoon.
I guess one possibility would be more the native route, where you might want to go in there possibly and plant things like purple coneflower, some of the rebeckias, possibly some of the native grasses. Those would be extremely low maintenance once you get them established. The other route would be more of the cultivated plants, maybe something like some of the daylilies, for example. There are some repeat blooming daylilies that will bloom for 10, 12 weeks during the summer, which is really great. Easy to grow. The nice thing with the daylilies, if you don't have a big budget, you can plant those, and within a few years you can dig them up and divide them, and you can have many, many more plants. So eventually you could fill in the whole area. So you might go the native route. You may want to go the cultivated route.
One thing to think about if you go the native route is the type of maintenance that you might need. And depending, if it sounded like you said you're in the country, if you're in the country, burning that small patch every few years a lot of times is one way to renovate or rejuvenate those native patches. Or you can use, I live in town and have prairie in my backyard, and I use mowing every couple of years to kind of get rid of the thatch and stuff and let things come back. So think of those kind of things as the kind of maintenance that you might need if you go a native route.
All right. The first thing you said was purple cornflower, and you said something else then before the daylilies, and I missed that. I was trying to write it down.
As far as native, maybe some of the rebeckias.
Rebeckia, that was it. Okay.
But also you have things like asters and Monarda or bee balm. There are a lot of native flowering plants that would look really nice. Also, some of the grasses would look nice too. So
the blue stems, like even right now, give some fall color. They have kind of a purple tinge to them. I know in places as I go by prairie areas and CRP lands that they're starting to get their kind of purple tinge, and there's little blue stem and big blue stem. There's Indian grass. There's a lot of different options out there.
Okay. Do you just plant these like in clusters and they spread, or do you sprinkle seed, or what do you do? How would you do that?
Well, it
depends on the cost of plant.
Yeah, if you go the native route, you really have a choice. You can buy seed. There are various seed mixes from companies. You can also buy small seedling plants from some companies. And so you have those options. Typically, you want to have just kind of a mix of things where it just kind of comes up normally looking. So you don't really design a thing. You just kind of put them there, kind of natural looking.
All right. And where should Marty start if she wants to look for native plants and seeds?
Well, she can maybe contact her county conservation board. They might know of local sources. There are some regional companies that they can look at. For example, they can go on the Internet. There are companies like Ion Exchange in northeast Iowa. There's the Prairie Nursery in Wisconsin, the Prairie Moon Nursery in southern Minnesota. So there are a number of companies that have those plants.
All right, Marty, thank you so much for your call. And next we have Drew in Cedar Rapids. Hello, Drew.
Hi. They have got some potted mums. I was wondering if I can put those in the ground and those would survive.
Right. The mums that you buy right now, they're widely sold at this time of year. The unfortunate thing is that when you put them in the ground, they almost invariably winter kill. So I regard those mums that you buy right now as annual plants, that you buy them, you plant them or put them in pots, you enjoy them for a few weeks, but most likely they're not going to survive the winter. If you want to establish those in the actual landscape as a perennial, I would buy and plant those in the spring, and they have a much better chance. But those that you buy in the fall when they're in bloom, despite what you may try, oftentimes they don't survive the winter. So,
all right, Drew, thanks a lot for your call. And if you'd like to call with a question, 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And next we have Charlie in Cedar Falls. Hello, Charlie.
Hi.
What's your question?
Oh, well, a few weeks ago I found underneath one of my hickory trees, it looked like someone dumped a barrel of wood chips underneath it. I went out and found that they were coming out of the tree. There's a hole at the base of the tree. Fairly good-sized chips, and they felt like they were pretty punky. I look in the tree, and it looks like someone had put some bricks and some concrete in the hole trying to plug it at the bottom, but obviously something has gotten through there. About 8 feet above the ground, right above this hole, there's a mark in the side of the tree where it looks like something has been trying to get into it, and I was able to stick a tape measure in there. Well, I've deduced that I can put about 12 inches of tape measure into it, and it looks like there's about 4 inches of good solid tree on the opposite side of this hole. But I'm guessing that this tree is probably not long for this world. And actually, the only thing I've seen get in and out of there are little chipmunks, but I don't know. I mean, these look like wood chips like you'd get from a landscaping place.
Hmm. Actually, my first thought is there's a number, if it is punky and stuff, there's actually a number of woodpeckers, no matter where it is on the tree, even down towards the ground, that will come and start chipping away and actually create little mini cavities sometimes in these areas where you're starting to get decay. And,
okay.
And you mentioned it, that the thing that you probably need to do is probably contact a certified arborist and have somebody inspect that tree, because depending on its location, if it's near the house or near a structure or the street, if there's only a certain amount of solid wood in that outer part of the tree, at some point, mechanically, that tree could fail. The weird thing is that tree could live many years because it only needs a couple inches or an inch or so just underneath the bark to stay alive for the plumbing system. But
right.
It can be completely hollow on the inner part of the tree. So you may want somebody to look at it closer, especially if it's near where, if it failed, it could be an issue. If it's out and about where, if it falls over, it doesn't matter, then you just let it go. But
yeah.
If it's close to something, you may want to have someone take a closer look at it.
Okay. Well, my question is that most of I'm in town, but I have a big lot, and most of my trees on the lot are pretty mature trees. There's quite a few hickories and some oak, a few hackberries and that type of thing. But it's a fairly complete canopy back in that area, and I would like to, well, you know, I've got a few younger hickories right along the lot line that are growing, but I was wondering, are there some trees that I can plant underneath the cavity there so I could get something that will replace these other trees as they start to go?
Well, it's kind of a challenge because to go back to get like more oak or more hickory, you actually need pretty good full sunlight. So if you don't have that available, then you need to look at other species that are adaptable to some shade. One option for a larger tree is actually sugar maple. It is a species that, as foresters, sometimes we kind of cuss because they come in the understory of our oak forest and eventually kind of take over, which is natural succession. But if you want oak hickory, it's hard to get that back. But that is one species in a landscape that if you've got space where you can underplant, that species could adapt. Another one is basswood or American linden. It actually will grow up in the understory of shade, is a little faster growing, a little weaker wooded. And then there's some other options, maybe until you create some openings, is some smaller trees like serviceberry, redbud, pagoda dogwood. Those are species that are natural woodland understory trees that would give you some character, but maybe you wait in some spots till those trees start to decline, and then you try to get some hickory and oak in some places just to get some more diversity. That way you're not going strictly to maple and some of those other species.
So if I want to get the hickory and oak, that's sort of something I plant once I start clearing the canopy, but I could get some maple and, I put a little linden tree out in the open in front of my house here a couple years back, but okay.
So mix it up that way. Where you think you might have some openings eventually, that's where you maybe put oak hickory, and then if you've got other areas where you're not sure and you want to get something established, you could start mixing a few maples and basswoods.
And these the hickories and the oaks, they need pretty much full day sun. There's a little hole in the top of the canopy is not going to be enough for them.
Not usually. You know, they'll hang there, they'll grow, but they really won't thrive. They really like, you know, the majority of the day they like some pretty good sunlight to really thrive.
Okay.
All right, Charlie, thanks a lot for your call.
Thank you.
And we have just a moment before we get to the break, but David sent us this email. He says, this year's garden produced a bumper crop of butternut squash. How do I best store them to last as long into the winter and spring as possible? Richard?
Winter squash, basically you want to go out and harvest them and leave a stem, maybe like a 3 or 4 inch stem attached to each fruit. And then you want to bring them inside, and you're looking for a location that is fairly cool, let's say around 50, 55 or so, and dry. So it might be a shed, it might be a garage, but it should be cool and dry. You'd like to put them in a single layer if you can, not put them in a pile because that would generate some heat. So hopefully in a single layer, maybe on a shelf, on a table, or someplace like that.
All right. Thank you so much for your email, David. And if you have any questions for us, give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send us email at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. It's Horticulture Day today, and with me are Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron and Mark Vitosh, who's a forester with the Department of Natural Resources. The number again is 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It is Horticulture Day today. We've been talking about fall chores and some of the things you need to do to get your yard and garden ready for winter. With me today are Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron and Mark Vitosh, a forester with the Department of Natural Resources. And you are welcome to join the conversation with your questions at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send us email at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Richard, we were talking about squash just before the break. Is there anything you need to know about trying to tell if the squash is actually ready to be picked?
Well, there are various varieties, and you want to make sure they have their characteristic color. For example, if you have a butternut squash, they should be uniformly tan in color, kind of a brownish tan. If you have an acorn squash, typically a dark green, and the portion resting on the ground might be a bright orange. So you have that characteristic color, but they also have a very hard skin when they're mature. So if you go out with your thumbnail, they're very hard to cut or pinch as far as with your thumbnail.
Okay. And it's been very dry, so this wouldn't be a problem. But if the rains start to come, would it be advisable to just go ahead and harvest as opposed to let them sit on wet ground?
Right. If we had a lot of wet weather in early fall, some of those, because they're resting on the damp ground, could rot. But at this point, you can probably go out and harvest most of your squash. At this point, they're probably not going to mature much further. And if they are mature, I'd be inclined to go out, maybe harvest them either this weekend or next week.
All right. Paul is on the line in Iowa City. Hello, Paul.
Good morning.
Hi. What's your question?
Well, I'm curious. We planted a garden last spring, and we're blessed with a lot of volunteer maple trees. I wonder if I can transplant those to the front yard, and if I should plant just one or two, or do I need to do anything to the soil? Anything I should pay attention to?
You're one of the only people I've ever heard talk about volunteer maple trees as a blessing. So, Mark?
Well, you may want to know what kind it is first, Paul, to know if it's what we call a silver maple or what someone calls a soft maple, which is rather fast-growing, it's going to get rather large, or a sugar maple, or even one called Norway maple. So you may want to kind of try to find out maybe what it is, and if you can take a couple digital photos of the leaf, you can actually email them to me, and I can help you try to identify them. And you can get my email if you go to the Iowa DNR site, iowadnr.gov, and then click on forestry. You can find my email. But what I would say is I would try to find out what it is first and then find out if you have a space that fits that. And then you could use that. And you have a couple options. You could dig that up this fall once the leaves fall off and move it, or you could leave it in that spot till early spring before it leaves out and then dig it up and move it. Either way, if it's a young seedling, you probably want to put a small cage or something so the rabbits don't eat it all the way down the ground this winter and protect it. So you have two options. You can dig it in a couple weeks once the leaves fall off, or you can wait till spring and dig it before the leaves come on.
All right. Does that help you out?
That's great. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Paul. We were blessed once with lots and lots of volunteer maple trees in our gutters. But
yeah, I've had those too. But it's really
what
critical.
What does that indicate?
They don't clean their gutters enough.
Well, you know, I've revealed too much. Elaine is on the line in Belle Plaine. Hello, Elaine.
Hi there.
Hi, what would you like to talk about?
I wondered if it was too late to prune Wagellias or Diablo 9 bark.
Well, I would prefer to prune those in the spring. We normally
after
don't.
After they bloom?
Well, in the case of the Wagella, they bloom typically around late May, early June, and you could prune them immediately after that flush of bloom in late spring.
Okay.
With the 9 bark, I would prune that probably sometime in March, early April. They do flower, but the flowers aren't really that ornamental. So I would prefer to do those when the plant is dormant.
But wouldn't, if I pruned them in the spring, the 9 bark, wouldn't that destroy all the blooms?
Well, they wouldn't bloom as much. But like I said, I don't consider the bloom on the Diablo 9 bark to be that ornamental. They're grown mainly for the...
beautiful. Mine are just beautiful. They're the Copertina, so I don't know if that makes a difference or not, but
right.
You know.
It's your choice.
It's
mainly grown for the very attractive foliage.
Yeah,
and
but it won't hurt it if I trim it now, right?
It probably won't be a problem, but I tend to shy away from doing that in the fall of the year. I don't like making fresh wounds late in the year.
Mm-hmm.
There might be a chance, possibly, if we have a really nice fall, where you might get some new growth, possibly. Not likely, but it's a possibility. So I really don't like doing it in the fall. So I would prefer doing it late winter, early spring, or in the case of something like Wagella, immediately after blooming.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Elaine. We have an email from Lisa in Bentendorf. She says, I've moved and I want to move my rhubarb to my new house. At the old house, the rhubarb has almost been taken over by trumpet vine. How can I move the rhubarb without bringing trumpet vine along?
Okay. Well, I don't think you should have a big problem with that. As far as timing-wise, probably a little bit late this year. You could do that early next spring. You want to go out as the growth begins to emerge from the ground, dig it up. The trumpet vine does send out roots, and it basically will sprout from those roots. But I don't think you're probably going to have a big problem. You can examine the root ball and look for a different type of root, something that's different than what's attached to the base of the rhubarb plant. And if you find something that looks a little bit different, then pull that out or remove that before you plant.
All right. Good advice. And if you want to revive rhubarb in the spring that has not been looking good, are there some tricks?
Well, as far as the care, just make sure that they have at least 6 hours of direct sun. They like full sun. Make sure it's a well-drained soil. You can go ahead and fertilize them lightly in the spring, and I would just use like an all-purpose garden fertilizer, like a 10-10-10, to sprinkle a small amount around the plant. Harvest for a time in the spring. Typically stop harvesting around early to mid-June. That allows the plant to recover and regain its strength. And during the rest of the summer, keep the weeds away, maybe water periodically if it's extremely dry, that type of thing.
All right. Next up, we have Maria on the line in Des Moines. Hello, Maria.
Hi. I have two raised garden beds. This is our third summer of using them, and we've also incorporated edible landscaping in our front yard. This year, at each fall when I've closed them, I put compost that we've made on and then straw and covered it with plastic with weighted down with bricks. This year, our tomatoes were all, I start everything from seed. I use only heirloom organic seeds. Our tomatoes were all cracked and black on the bottom, mostly, not all of them, but most. Was that because of too much water? Is there something wrong with my soil? Should I close it differently in the fall?
Okay. Cracking, oftentimes, if you have cracking on the top portion of the fruit, that is oftentimes due to a sudden absorption of water when the fruit is actually mature. And so let's say the plants are maybe a little bit on the dry side and the fruits are approaching maturity, and then you go out and water thoroughly, or we have a really good rain, and you have this sudden uptake of moisture. And so the plant absorbs all this moisture. It goes up in the plant, into the fruit and foliage. And in the case of the fruit, if those fruits are basically nearing maturity as far as being full size, what do they do with all that moisture? They kind of crack. So the best way to avoid that is try to maintain a nice, even moisture supply where the plants always have a good supply of moisture. They're not too wet, but they never get dry. That helps. As far as the bottom, and certain varieties also tend to crack more than others. That is kind of a genetic trait. So some will do that, and despite what you might do, they tend to crack. So it's kind of a genetic trait, too. As far as the bottom, sometimes we'll see kind of these dark brown or black blotches on the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
They're quite large, like maybe the size of a silver dollar. And then... Mm-hmm. The bottom portion of the fruit eventually rots. That's called blossom end rot. And that's due to a lack of calcium in the developing fruit, but it also goes back to moisture, in that when we have uneven moisture supplies again, the plant is not absorbing enough calcium. Even though there is plenty in the soil, they're not absorbing what they need. And therefore, because you have these uneven moisture supplies, the fruit's not getting enough calcium, and again, that kind of leads to the black or brown spot on the bottom. So again, the best way that you can prevent that is to, again, try to keep an even moisture supply available to the plant.
Okay. I only had to water my garden 3 times this summer.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that was out of my control. Should I do something different when I close my gardens in the fall?
Well, now when you say close the gardens in the fall, I guess I'm not sure what you mean by that.
We seem to have lost her. So I guess we probably won't be able to answer that part of her question. But if it didn't sound like she had necessarily a lot of diseases that would overwinter and harm her tomatoes next year. It just sounds like it was a bad growing season for tomatoes, which we talked about quite a bit on the program this summer.
Well, yeah, the cracking and the blossom end rot, they're actually not a disease. They're basically a physiological disorder, so they're not a disease. But with all the rain, it would be surprising to me if they didn't have maybe some type of disease, like maybe some blight. Maybe it was not very severe, but maybe there was some present. And so I would be probably inclined to remove that dead plant debris, remove it from the area, and then have it destroyed, because blights and other diseases are very common on tomatoes, and the heirloom varieties are not resistant to those at all. So,
and would she want to move her tomatoes to another part of the garden next year?
That typically is the ideal situation if you can. If you have that option, if you're able to do that, that is the ideal situation, because if you plant the same thing in the same area year after year, you run the risk that something will build up in the soil, and initially the disease might be a fairly minor problem, but if you grow the same thing in the same location, it tends to get more severe over time, and it can lead to almost total failure.
All right. Neil's on the line from West Des Moines. Hello, Neil.
Hi there.
What's your question?
I've got a question about treatment for grub worms in our front yard. I'm a horticultural novice, and my neighbor suggested that she has grub worms in her front yard, and it looks like we might as well. So I'm wondering what I can do both for treatment now and if it's an appropriate time to do it in the fall here, going
okay.
into winter.
Well, first of all, white grubs are basically found probably in most lawns. If you were to go out and dig down, you would typically find in most lawns probably two or three in a square foot area. That's perfectly normal. Those numbers are not destructive, though. They're not. On occasion, every once in a while, we'll have large numbers where you go out and you would find 8, 9, or 10 in a square foot area. And in that case, those numbers get to be destructive, and they can actually destroy the grass. Oftentimes, the first sign that you have a grub problem is you go out and you see areas in your yard that are dug up overnight, and that was typically done by a coon or a skunk because they are after the grub. So oftentimes, that's the first sign that you have a grub problem. As far as treating, it's really too late for right now. It really is. The grubs are actually full grown, and the insecticides at this point would not be very effective.
Okay. Thanks a lot for your call, Neil. And we have a question from Rosemary in Iowa City on email. She says she has two questions about a plum tree that's around 10 years old. It's a blue plum, and I thought it was supposed to be self-fertile, but most years there have been no plums, and one year there were very few, although they were diseased. Should I have planted another plum with this tree in order to get fruit? That's the first question.
Well, there are different plums. There are plums that are self-fruitful. They will produce by themselves, and others that are self-unfruitful. So you really have to pay attention to the label or to the catalog where you buy these, whatever. Most of the blue ones do tend to be self-fruitful.
Okay.
Now, one problem with the plums is they do tend to bloom very early in the spring. And so if we have like a frost or freeze, when they're blooming, those cold temperatures could damage or destroy the flowers, and therefore they're not going to develop into fruit. Now, last year, for example, I think we had a frost or freeze around Mother's Day. And so some of the fruit trees, like the plums, may have already bloomed or were blooming at that time. And then if you have some cold temperatures, that could damage the flowers.
Okay, and if a plum tree is 10 years old and hasn't been producing, is time up?
That is something to consider. It's like, okay, I've got this tree. It hasn't done anything in 10 years. Do I really want to keep it? And that's a personal preference. But if it hadn't done anything for 10 years in my backyard, it would not be there the next spring.
All right. And we have one final question. I think this will be a quick one from Stacy in Bondurant. We have just a minute. Stacy, what's your question?
I'm rather fond of the swamp white oak trees, and I'd like to plant one in my backyard. But how close can I plant that near a basement foundation?
Well, from any house or anything, Stacy, I would probably try to be 25 to 30 feet away because of the potential spread of that tree, maybe even 35 feet. I would want pretty good distance away from the house just so it can spread, because that tree will get a spread of 35 to 40 feet eventually.
Okay, Stacy, thank you so much for your call, and thank you very much, Mark Vitosh.
Thank you.
He's a forester with the Department of Natural Resources, and thank you, Richard.
You're welcome.
Richard Giron with Iowa State University Extension. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese. Our executive producer is Jeff Schmidt. Production assistance today from Lindsay Moon. Technical support from Russell Mansky in Ames. Podcasting and on-demand audio of Talk of Iowa are available at iowapublicradio.org. And you can send us email anytime, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. I'm Charity Nebbe. Monday on Talk of Iowa, creating a sense of place through art in Grinnell. And Possum Trot, a new collection of short stories by Harley McElrath. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.